It's Friday, April 3rd, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers. Welcome to the podcast. Once again, we've made it to the end of another wonderful week in marijuana law reform. Lots of stuff to check out at the blog at stash.normal.org that we just can't get into the podcast, including some videos you really need to see. Judge Jim Gray talks about legalizing marijuana, Carlos Santana talking about legalizing marijuana, and Barry Cooper from Never Get Busted, the former policeman who's now working to help our side, confronts the police chief of Austin, Texas, on a video that's posted at our blog. So check them out. Also, looking forward to the agenda at stash.normal.org/agenda. We want to get all of your events on the calendar so more people can know about them. Of course, 420 is coming up in a couple of weeks from now, and you're sure to be doing something then. Please send me a note at stash@normal.org so I can broadcast your event to the rest of the cannabis community. Then a couple weeks after that, on May 2nd, is the Global Marijuana March. And if you have some event going on for the march, be sure to let me know at stash@normal.org. I've already got information up for Austin, Texas, St. Louis, Missouri, Portland, Oregon, and a few other locations. So let's fill up that calendar so the people near you can get involved with their own liberation. Now, coming up on today's Stash, we've got your hemp headlines, including a look at the new Ron Paul Hemp Farming Act that was just introduced today, and a look at Texas raising their age for tobacco smoking, and some of my ideas on age limits for substance consumption. Today's our Celebrity Entertainment Report that we always have every other Friday, so we're visited by Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com. He's going to be telling us about the new stoner movie Adventureland and a new piece on his blog written by Tommy Chong himself, memorializing Zabo, a friend of his from the Gold's Gym days back in the 60s, who also appeared in a couple of cameo shots in the Cheech and Chong movies. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, features It's a Rap Friday with Earthquake Institute. And in our second interview segment, the Cannabis Conversations, we finish part two of our interview with Keith Straup, looking back at the history of Normal through the 1970s as chronicled in the book High in America by Patrick Anderson. Remember, folks, April showers bring May flowers, and you know what kind of flowers I'm talking about. Let's get ready. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Support the Industrial Hemp Farming Act of 2009. Washington, D.C. Texas Republican Ron Paul, along with 10 co-sponsors, are once again seeking to allow for the commercial farming of industrial hemp. House Bill 1866, the Industrial Hemp Farming Act of 2009, would exclude low-potency varieties of marijuana from federal prohibition. If approved, this measure will grant state legislatures the authority to license and regulate the commercial production of hemp as an industrial and agricultural commodity. Since 1999, numerous states, including North Dakota, Montana, and Vermont, have enacted state regulations to allow for the cultivation of hemp under state law. However, none of these laws can be implemented without federal approval. Passage of HB 1866 would remove existing federal barriers and allow states that wish to regulate commercial hemp production the authority to do so. Upon introducing the bill in Congress, Representative Paul said, quote, "It is unfortunate that the federal government has stood in the way of American farmers, including many who are struggling to make ends meet, from competing in the global industrial hemp market. Indeed, the founders of our nation, some of whom grew hemp, would surely find that federal restrictions on farmers growing a safe and profitable crop on their own land are inconsistent with the constitutional guarantee of a limited, restrained federal government. Therefore, I urge my colleagues to stand up for American farmers and co-sponsor the Industrial Hemp Farming Act," end quote. According to a 2005 Congressional Resource Service report, the United States is the only developed nation that fails to cultivate industrial hemp as an economic crop. As a result, U.S. companies that specialize in hempen goods, such as Dr. Bronner's Magic Soaps, Patagonia, Nature's Path, and Nutiva, have no choice but to import hemp material. These added production costs are then passed on to the consumer, who must pay artificially high retail prices for hempen goods. Previous versions of the Industrial Hemp Farming Act were introduced in both the 108th and 109th Congresses, but failed to receive a public hearing or committee vote. Please write your members of Congress today and tell them to end the federal prohibition of industrial hemp production. For your convenience, a pre-written letter is available online at our Activists Alerts page. For more information about industrial hemp, please visit votehemp.org. Pot smokers may take more risks on the road. Young men who are impulsive thrill seekers are more likely to admit to driving while high on marijuana, Canadian researchers report. Men who drove under the influence of cannabis were also more likely to report certain risky driving behaviors and tend to get in more accidents, doctors Isabelle Ricker and Jacques Bergeron of the University of Montreal say. After alcohol, cannabis is the mind-altering substance most often found in the urine or blood of drivers after a crash, the researchers note in the journal Accident Analysis and Prevention. Studies have shown that people's driving skills are impaired within the first hour after smoking pot, they add. And it's also possible, according to Ricker and Bergeron, that people who get behind the wheel after smoking marijuana are also by nature more likely to be dangerous drivers. Study participants with high scores on personality tests measuring sensation-seeking and impulsivity were more likely to say they had driven under the influence of cannabis in the past year. The pot-smoking drivers were also more likely to report having engaged in risky driving, meaning driving in a careless way that could hurt others but isn't intended to do so, and negative emotional driving, for example, getting angry with other motorists. These men were also more likely to exhibit these behaviors in the simulation tests. There was a slight increased likelihood that the pot smokers would get in crashes, and they were also more likely to admit to drinking and driving. Okay, so what you're telling me is that young men who are impulsive sensation seekers are likely to smoke pot, drive risky, and get road rage. Well, color me surprised. Impulsive young men do stupid things. At 16, I once stole my dad's pickup and gas credit card to hook up with a girl who lived in Tri-Cities, Washington, whom I'd met just that week in Boise, Idaho, all on impulse, not thinking that the credit card receipts would totally ruin my alibi lie. I also drove fairly recklessly, almost wrecking the truck as I went off the road and spun out in the median of the freeway, while I was completely sober. I hadn't even touched alcohol or cannabis by that point in my life. So go figure. Teenage hormones made me a worse driving risk than cannabis ever has. The fly in the ointment in this news report for me is cannabis is the mind-altering substance most often found in the urine or blood or drivers after a crash. No kidding. Considering that cannabis is the third most used substance after alcohol or tobacco, it wouldn't be surprising at all to find cannabis in people's blood or urine. With the urine test, the cannabis can turn up even weeks after smoking. With the blood test, days. What none of this proves is that they were, quote, driving while high on marijuana, end quote. In most of America, we have a 0.08 blood alcohol standard. That is, above that, you are per se impaired. What that implies, then, is that below 0.08, it is possible you are not too impaired to drive. Similarly, we have a whole host of pharmaceuticals whose ads say, until you know how you may react to fuckatol, don't drive or operate heavy machinery. Which suggests to me that once you do know how you may react, it is possible you are not too impaired to drive. Yet with cannabis, these studies will point to drivers who've been in a crash who've had inactive, non-impairing marijuana metabolites in their urine and proclaim, aha! Young men who are impulsive thrill-seekers are more likely to admit to driving while high on marijuana. At Normal, we are clear. You should never smoke and drive. Mostly for self-preservation, the vast majority of pot possession busts are made during traffic encounters with police. Smoking and driving is not responsible use. However, these reports that imply a huge social risk from cannabis-impaired drivers are way overblown. I've said it before, when someone can show me the bar that has only taxi cabs in its parking lot, you can talk to me about the social danger of stone drivers. Texas may raise legal smoking age from 18 to 19. Though they are legally considered adults and can serve in the military, 18-year-old Texans would be considered minors when it comes to smoking, under a bill passed unanimously through a Senate committee Tuesday. The measure would increase the legal age for buying tobacco products to 19 and would cut off an estimated $12.5 million in tax revenue for the state over the next 2 years. Supporters say raising the legal age will prevent teens from smoking an extra year and keep cigarettes out of high schools, where they can be passed along to younger students. According to the Department of State Health Services, roughly one-fourth of Texas high school students smoked cigarettes in 2006. Four other states, Alabama, Utah, Alaska, and New Jersey, have raised the smoking age to 19. In the past, opponents have said that if 18-year-olds are old enough to serve in the military, they should be allowed to choose whether to smoke. But at least one senator who opposed the measure on those grounds 2 years ago has changed his position. Senator Bob Dole, Republican of Greenville, said Tuesday that more information and statistics about teens smoking in high school led him to vote for the measure in committee. With approval from the Senate Health and Human Services Committee, the proposal now seeks a hearing with the full Senate. If our laws actually followed the science about the danger to human development and addictiveness of these substances, the legal age for alcohol would be 24, for tobacco it would be 21, and cannabis would be 18. Personally, I've always felt that a set age for mind-altering substance consumption is not the best way to regulate their use. I know some 18-year-olds who are rational and responsible cannabis consumers, and I know some 40-year-olds who are reckless and embarrassing. Therefore, I personally think we ought to use educational attainment and employment to grant consumption privileges, up until age 24, when you gain the privilege automatically. Graduate high school or get a GED, and contribute 36 months of part-time or full-time payroll taxes into Social Security, or 36 months of a 2.5 GPA in undergrad classes, and you receive your consumption license. If a kid started to work at 16 and graduated at 18, by age 19, he'd accumulate 36 months and would be allowed to consume alcohol, tobacco, and cannabis. If he didn't start work until after graduation at age 18, or decided to go to college, by age 21, he'd earn his consumption license. If the kid does nothing but drop out and be a bum, well, then he doesn't get to party until he's 24. Even the over 24-year-olds, however, would have to get the license. The consumption license would also require its own safety course and registration. People would get the objective facts about substances, the laws concerning them, instructions for safest use, awareness of addiction, and information on treatment and rehabilitation. People who abuse their consumption license could have it suspended or revoked. We'd have reliable statistics as to how many people are consuming substances, and the license could have a renewal fee and generate money for the state that would go toward treatment programs. The added benefit is a bit of coercion for students to stay in school and for graduates to go to college or work. Substance use wouldn't be seen as a rite of passage that comes along automatically at a certain age, but rather as a privilege that is only extended to responsible, educated adults. For those who choose not to use, they don't have to be taxed to care for the substance users. The user's consumption licenses would take care of that. I can think of all manner of logistical hurdles and political difficulties in instituting such a system, but it makes more sense than just declaring that at a certain age, a human is responsible enough to smoke, drink, and toke.
Stupid Stoner Stories.
As a public service, Normal reminds you that smoking marijuana will not make one stupid. However, some stupid people do smoke marijuana. Don't be one of those stoners that make the rest of us look bad. Learn your lesson from today's
Stupid Stoner Story.
Very elderly man caught with huge marijuana haul.
Lagos, Nigeria. Nigeria's anti-narcotics agency confiscated 6.5 tons of marijuana Tuesday from the home of a man who claimed to be 114 years old. The National Drug Law Enforcement Agency said it had found 254 sacks of cannabis at the home of Solomon Adebayo in Ogun State, north of the commercial capital of Lagos. NDLEA Chairman Amadou Guide said in a statement, quote, "The quantity of drugs suggests a large-scale involvement. There is more to the case than Pa Solomon," end quote. Adebayo, who said he had been a farmer all of his life, told police he thought the sacks contained rice.
Wow. What are you going to do with a 114-year-old marijuana smuggler if indeed he's not just a poor duped farmer? Throw him in jail? Fine him? Well, you know my rule. Once you hit 80, you ought to be allowed to have any drug you like. What? You're worried about addiction and your health? We're worried about them going on a crime spree? It would give the people in their 70s something to aim for, and it would make the bingo halls a whole lot more fun. Imagine being 80 years old and then hanging around for another 34 years. I think I would need about 13,000 pounds of pot to make it. That's about a pound a day.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a lawyer.
I'm a journalist.
I'm a student.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a representative.
I have cancer.
The outdated laws of prohibition are more dangerous than the plant itself.
I lost my scholarship.
I was fired.
20 million arrests since 1965. This is getting ridiculous.
Our prisons are overcrowded with nonviolent offenders.
We have the opportunity to change.
This is costing our country billions of dollars.
Making my family and I fight in a courtroom is difficult enough when I'm already fighting through chemotherapy.
There's no reason to be scared by tradition anymore.
We can stop this.
We can stop this.
We are the American people.
We can stop this.
And you have our support.
We are old.
Young.
straight,
gay.
We're every race and nationality.
And we're not going to give up.
You can tax it.
You can regulate it.
Apply age restrictions.
You can create millions of new jobs.
We can save our economy.
President Obama?
It's time for legalization.
Legalization?
Yes.
We
can.
This has been a public service moment.
Marijuana culture is infused throughout America and the world. As we round out the week, we take a look at the 420 phenomenon in movies, TV, music, and sports with former High Times editor and author of Pot Culture, Steve Bloom, in our CelebStoner.com entertainment news.
Whenever we want to find out what's going on in the world of entertainment, celebrities, music, and sports, and how that regards cannabis, we always take a look at CelebStoner.com, and we're visited by Steve Bloom, the head webmaster and former High Times editor. Welcome back to the show, Steve.
Hey, Russ. How are you?
I'm doing good. You know, last year, we talked a whole lot about how it was, you know, the big year for stoner movies, and all these great shows had come out, and now we've got, you know, at the beginning of the spring and summer season, it looks like we've got another great movie. Tell our listeners about Adventureland.
Yeah, Adventureland opens today or Friday, and it's the first stoner movie of 2009. I mean, really legitimate stoner movie, even though it's not being pegged as such, although the tagline for the movie is low hours, low pay, high times. But I'm already reading reviews, and people aren't really bringing up the marijuana aspect to the movie, so I guess it's up to Celeb Stoner to alert people to this. And there have been a bunch of movies so far this season with marijuana use in it, Miss March, and there's in I Love You Man, you know, there's a bong, although they don't smoke, you know, there's, you know, we discussed April the 13th and stuff like that, but this is the first movie really with a lot of marijuana use in it. Adventureland is from director Greg Mottola, who did Superbad, which was written by Seth Rogen, and surprisingly didn't have any marijuana in it. now, this one is kind of a change. It's loosely about Mottola's upbringing, although Mottola grew up in New York. This is set in Pittsburgh, but it's around the era of his, you know, the 80s is sort of when he grew up, and it's set in 1987 at an amusement park that's kind of like a little bit, you know, a little run down. And basically the storyline is this, that Jesse Eisenberg, who people may remember from The Squid and the Whale, is like the main character, and he's just graduated college. He wants to go away to Europe for the summer, and his parents all of a sudden don't have the money, and they say, hey, listen, you got to get a job. We can't afford it. So he takes a job at Adventureland, and Adventureland is managed by a couple who are played by Saturday Night Live cast members Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig. And so he goes and he does a job interview, and they give him the job right away. There's not much of an interview, and you know, next thing you know, he's working like kind of like a carny. He's, you know, his job is like, if you know those games where you roll the ball down and you gotta have to get into the hole, it's the horse race, or, you know, the ring tosses, the basketball stuff. And it's all the little cons that go on, you know, how people can't really win. Jesse Eisenberg's character, James, is the virgin. He's kind of awkward, around women. The marijuana comes in very early in the movie. When Jesse goes to work at Adventureland, a friend of him gives him a bag of weed and says, here, take this, you're going to need it. And that bag of weed comes in really handy throughout the movie. He becomes very popular due to the bag of weed, which sort of never runs out all summer long, this one bag of weed. So he's constantly being hit up for joints by people. And it's a very cool soundtrack also. It kind of mixes up you know, the hair metal from the 80s, disco, sort of maybe from the early 80s, and alternative rock with like good songs like, From the Replacements and Husker Du. And so it's a really smart movie. It just hit me right. I mean, for me personally, I'm just sort of a fan of amusement parks, especially the rundown ones. I live in New York and I spent a lot of my years at Coney Island, and I wrote a book back in the early 80s, my first book called Video Invaders, about the history of video games up to that point. So I spent a lot of time in arcades playing pinball and arcade and video games and all the old mechanical shoot 'em up games. So it just hit me right.
Oh, excellent. It sounds like a really good film. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Another big event that's taking place this weekend in Ann Arbor, Michigan is the 38th annual Hash Bash. We've been promoting that all week on the Stash, but I thought you'd be the perfect person to talk to about this, to give our listeners a little bit of the flavor of it and the history of it and why it's so important in the movement.
First of all, didn't you hear that Michael Phelps is going to be speaking at Hash Bash?
Really?
Yeah. Well, that was our April Fool's Day. We had a lot of fun with that. And Adam Brook, who organizes Hash Bash, he came to me that morning and said, hey, do you want to do a little April Fool's joke on the website? Let's say that Michael Phelps is coming. And turns out that they've done a T-shirt for, you know, the event this year. And the T-shirt says, Michael Phelps is my hero. Legalize it. And they got the side view of him with the bong and the hat backwards, and, you know, kind of, it's a fun little illustrated, you know, t-shirts. Hash Bash is one of the oldest, rally events in the U.S. It started in 1971. It was part of the campaign to free John Sinclair, back in the days. John was, you know, one of the early marijuana activists. He was the manager of the MC5. He started the White Panther Party, and he was like a big player in the Michigan, you know, political scene back in those days, and he was set up by cops, sold two joints, ended up getting like a 20-year sentence. And so it took Hash Bash and a big concert, John Lennon and Yoko Ono, Plastic Ono Band, Stevie Wonder, Commander Cody, and all kinds of bands to come and, you know, bring a lot of attention to John's situation, and he got pardoned shortly thereafter. And so 71 was the first year. It takes place in Ann Arbor, on the campus of University of Michigan, on the Diag. It's kind of unique in a lot of ways. Unlike Boston Freedom Rally, which is an all-day affair, at least from 12 to 6, the Seattle Hemp Fest, which goes, you know, 2 days, you know, for like from 10 to 8, this is a one-hour event. They've always had a problem getting anything more than that 1 hour. So that's the tradition of the event. From 12 o'clock, high noon, to 1 o'clock, a lot of students and people gather, have a lot of signs, and they stand on the steps of one of the main buildings there on the Diag, and usually probably use like a megaphone to talk. I don't even know if they use a sound system. I haven't been there for the last few years, but I've gone there over the years several times, and I don't know if they've changed that. And in the past, they would have people like Gatewood Galbraith, who's famously ran for governor in Kentucky, and Chef Ra, who used to be the cooking expert for High Times, who died a couple of years ago. He would always show up. And this year I hear Jack Herer is going to be there, and I hope he makes it. Jack broke a rib recently, and I don't know if Jack is well enough to travel, but I saw on the MySpace page that Jack is going to be there. We're also going to do a tribute to Chef Ra and also to May Nutt, Grandma Marijuana, who lived in northern Michigan, and she was one of the first people to get on the medical marijuana bandwagon back in the late 80s. And so it's a fun event. It just goes real fast. Before you know it, it's over. And then what they do for the rest of the day, there's what they call the Monroe Street Festival or Street Fair. And basically, there's a lot of vendors, and they set up a little mini stage. And for the rest of the day on Monroe Street, there's a lot of people coming back, you know, hanging out throughout the day.
I did want to take a look at one of your new columnists. Over at Celeb Stoner, you've got a lot of bloggers there who are writing on various aspects of cannabis culture and community. And you scored quite the snag here on one of these bloggers. Tell them about your latest post here.
Well, Tommy Chong is blogging a Celeb Stoner. Tommy loves Celeb Stoner, and, you know, we cover Cheech and Chong and Tommy all the time. And this week out of the blue, I received an email from Tommy with a blog piece about Erwin Szabo Kaczewski, someone who probably is not, you know, familiar to anybody out there listening. But his name is Szabo to Tommy and all his friends. And Szabo was sort of famous for being a bodybuilder, who ran the Gold's Gym in L.A. back in the 60s and 70s. And Tommy is big into health and training, and he's not like buff, you know, like a bodybuilder buff. But Tommy, you know, likes to keep, you know, himself in good physical condition. And years ago, when he was much younger, before he even met Cheech, you know, he was just a young guy, and he kind of went into the gym, and he met Szabo, and Szabo kind of became his mentor. And and so he worked there in the gym for about a year. And during that time, I guess it was early 70s. I'm not quite sure of the dates. He says it was before Cheech, before they met, but it was around the time when Arnold Schwarzenegger came through the gym, and that's that story that Tommy's been telling lately, that he had gotten high with Arnold. Well, it really had to do with Szabo. Szabo was sort of the guy who brought everybody together, and as Tommy writes, he says, he turned the bodybuilding world onto pot. So here was a guy who he said he loved jazz, loved reefer, he just needed a gym, nice weather, and some good weed, and this guy was happy. And so Tommy really wrote a very sweet tribute to Szabo, who died last Saturday at the age of 87 years old. If you take a look at the website, you'll see what Szabo looked like during his prime. He was really a sculpted, he had that, he won all the awards for abs, this, that, and the other thing. He was quite famous in the bodybuilding community. So, and to this day, I believe he remained famous. So those people out there who are familiar with bodybuilding, probably know who Szabo is, and those who don't, here was a guy who was sort of instrumental in that community, who turned a lot of people onto marijuana. So, it's a really nice piece. And also this week I have a great piece by Ed Rosenthal as well. And this piece about, if you saw D.L. Yulee, breaks the news on CNN, he went and did a report at a dispensary in Oakland. And then he also did a kind of a debate with, Ronald Brooks, who's the head of the Narcotics Officers Association. Mm-hmm. That guy is really an idiot. And, and so Yulee kind of took him on, but Yulee's not really that knowledgeable about the subject. And Ed decided to really just challenge everything that, Brooks had said to Yulee. And he did it in a very funny way. Probably his funniest line was that, Brooks says that, that over in Amsterdam, everybody just sits around cafes, watch cartoons and eat Twinkies. And Ed made the joke. He says, "Wow, you found Twinkies in Amsterdam? I've been looking for Twinkies for years. Where are they? So Ed was very funny. And Ed also been knocking on the door to do some blogging on the website. So it was his first as well. So it was kind of a big week in the blogging aspect of the website.
Before we wrap things up, Steve, got any final notes for our listeners out there?
Not really. I think I'm kind of tapped out.
Well, it's spring, I guess. We're kind of tapped out too. Steve Bloom joins us on every other Friday here at the Daily Audio Stash to give us the Celebrity Entertainment Report. Check out the website at celebstoner.com. There's plenty there for everyone. Hey, Steve, have yourself a great weekend. We'll talk to you again in a couple weeks.
Thanks,
Ruff. Just say no.
No matter what you call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
You don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life.
Hey, this is great, man.
Even if you never smoked marijuana.
I never used marijuana. Sorry.
Don't think you smoked marijuana.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Or you used to smoke marijuana.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Pot Culture by former High Times editor Steve Bloom and Shirley Halperin will answer every question you ever had about marijuana culture.
Has that marijuana made it back up here yet?
Check out Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life at Amazon.com or visit potculturebook.com today.
Too bad, man. I just stopped smoking yesterday.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. Get ready for some ground-shaking, body-rocking hip-hop. This It's a Rap Friday with the Super Pimpin' Boys from the Earthquake Institute, who bring us their song, Medicated, nominated in 2008's Marijuana Music Awards. The Earthquake Institute are Simon Says and Spitball from California. They spin only the best in classic hip-hop, dancehall rhythms, electro-funk, and club hits. The group have been hard at work on their new CD, Super B-Boy Pimpin', now available on iTunes. The album is sure to be a West Coast classic with tight flows, gritty drum beats, soulful tunes, and weed smoke. The Earthquake Institute say, get ready, cause the big one's coming. You can grab the new CD at myspace.com/Earthquake Institute, where you can also check out the group's great music videos. And registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's the Earthquake Institute with Medicated.
this is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. We are the oldest, largest, and best-known marijuana law reform organization in America. And it's all because of your support. Take some time to join Normal at www.normal.org. Your membership supports this podcast, our websites, our policy research and analysis, and our annual conferences. Changing marijuana laws is a grassroots effort, and it starts with you, the stakeholder. Join Normal today and add your voice to the millions of cannabis consumers who demand equality with our beer-drinking friends.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our Normal daily audio stash, Cannabis Conversations. We continue with part two of our discussion with the founder of Normal, Keith Straub, on the history of Normal, the organization, through the 1970s, as chronicled in the book High in America by Patrick Anderson. What lessons could the reformers of the modern day learn from the reformers of the 70s?
Well, I think the basic one is strike when the iron is hot and don't presume that the political climate is always going to be favorable for your position. We thought after the Marijuana Commission report in 72 and with our run of states up through the late 70s, we literally thought it was just a few years until we would have marijuana legal in this country and we could all go work on some other issue. But the truth is, the mood of the country changed a lot. And again, we thought even when it began to get more conservative, we thought it might be a decade before we could come back and begin to take the initiative again. Well, it was closer to three decades. We didn't get back to talking about actually legalizing marijuana, regulating and taxing it until the last two or three years. That was the mid-70s. We're now talking 30 years later. So we've got to make whatever progress we can make over the next 4 or 5 years, because there's no guarantee that 7 or 8 or 9 years down the road, the country is still going to be quite so friendly as they are right now. It's the most receptive I've seen it in my 40 years working on this issue.
And yet, as receptive as it seems the public is to the issue, we just saw the public vote to the marijuana legalization question to the top of three different categories at Barack Obama's website, asking for questions from the American people. Could I get your reaction to Obama's reaction, his somewhat humorous dismissal of the issue?
Well, I think it was a mistake on his part. I mean, keep in mind that Obama, back when he was a state senator and was running for the U.S. Senate, endorsed decriminalizing marijuana. He's never endorsed legalizing it that I've ever seen, but he certainly has indicated that he smoked it himself for a number of years and he thought we should decriminalize marijuana. It would have seemed to me to have made more sense for him to at least acknowledge that we do have some need to reform our marijuana policies, even if he wasn't willing to say, yes, I think we ought to legalize and tax marijuana as a stream of revenue. Now, I think he's missing an opportunity. I mean, I think he ought to propose that we legalize marijuana. But if he's not ready to do that yet, and I understand he's a new president in the first few months in office, you usually try to avoid some of these most controversial issues, but he should not have ridiculed marijuana smokers. Keep in mind that by some surveys, 47% of the entire adult population have smoked marijuana at some time in their lives, and 26 million people smoked it just last year. So for him to make fun of marijuana smokers and of people who voted for this issue on the internet is not very smart, I think. And I suspect, because of the feedback the White House is now receiving, that there will be a time down the road when he says something a little more receptive to our community.
I should hope so. And one thing I always like to point out about that statistic of the annual cannabis users, 25, 26 million of us, is that that means there's more of us than there are Texans, adult African Americans, or people with diabetes, both diagnosed and undiagnosed.
Well, and I'll tell you on that other figure about people that have ever smoked marijuana in their life, the 47% figure is actually 5 years old now, or 6 years old. It was in December of 2002. So I would suggest what that means is that there are currently more living Americans who have smoked marijuana than who have not. And that, to me, says we're near a tipping point. I do not believe that the fans of prohibition can maintain the status quo very long once a majority of Americans know there's nothing really wrong with smoking marijuana.
Another thing President Obama said this weekend on CBS's Face the Nation is he brought up Bob Schieffer brought up the violence in Mexico from the bloodthirsty drug cartels down there, and brought up these notions of legalization and such. And President Obama said something to the effect of, back in the days of prohibition, when we went after Al Capone, that caused violence to rise. How do you think we should best focus on this Mexican issue to not scare the public, but to inform them of the way that we could actually solve the problem?
Well, first off, if you remember, the former head of ONDCP, Walters, made a big deal a few years ago of claiming that anyone who smoked marijuana in America was supporting terrorists.
Right.
And it was on this theory that somehow our money was going to foreign countries and drug cartels, etc. Well, if you're talking about cocaine, I think there's a pretty good dose of truth in that. Cocaine is all, or almost all, imported, all basically imported. Lots of it comes from Central and South America. And so I think there's some truth that if we could limit the American appetite for cocaine, a lot of this problem along the Mexican border would probably disappear. But the suggestion that somehow marijuana smokers are responsible for that is absolutely silly. The vast majority of marijuana in this country, I mean, that's smoked in this country, is grown in this country. We grow the best marijuana in the world. And the only people that buy Mexican marijuana are young people and people who are low income, because it's cheap, it's not very good quality, and frankly, I almost don't know anybody who smokes Mexican marijuana. It's all domestic. So that's one of the reasons, as you know, we've got a banner we sometimes run on the Normal website that says, fight terrorism, buy domestic marijuana. The real answer, if to the extent that there is any impact on the violence on the Mexican border because of the demand for marijuana in this country, well, then there's an easy answer. Legalize and regulate marijuana as we did with alcohol when we ended alcohol prohibition, and guess what? The black market will dry up. There is no longer a need for it, because we would all prefer to buy our marijuana from a safe and secure environment. I would love to never deal with the black market again, but the only way we get there is to legalize, and by that I mean legally regulate marijuana and tax it similar to how we do alcohol.
We started off by talking about the book High in America, written back in the early 80s. What is the next book that's coming out? I understand you've got something coming out soon, and will this deal with the history since 1980?
Yes, there are actually a couple of books. Paul Armentano, our deputy director, has a book that'll be out, I think, by August, September, that deals with marijuana policy, but in particular, I think, focuses a lot on the medical research. And then I have a book that I hope to complete within the next 2 weeks. I've been saying that for far too long, but I think we're almost complete with it, and I hope we'll be out in the fall. That's titled The High Road, A Cultural History of Marijuana in America. And it will indeed pick up where the High in America left off. And basically, it's an attempt to look back over the last 37 years and to try to figure out, did we learn anything from this experience? And if so, let's talk about it. So, yes, those two books I hope people will find useful.
Now, we'll pick both of them up, and I'm sure we'll have both of you on to discuss them as they get released. And I know a lot of people will be buying them, because they're very interested about the truth about this and the history and knowing our roots, because I've always said that if you don't know where you come from, you have no idea where you're going. So we got to learn what's happened in the past and learn from those of you who came before us and stay with us today to keep fighting this adult marijuana prohibition. Thanks,
well,
Keith.
Well, also, we don't want to make the same mistakes again, frankly.
Exactly.
It's not, you know, there's no easy path when you're trying to change public policy. There are a number of ways you can try to do it. Some of them are fruitful, and some of them, frankly, are not. And part of the game is trying to figure out where you spend your limited resources. And I think being familiar with our past and understanding what we did right and what we did wrong is terribly important.
Thank you so much for joining us here. Keith Stropp, the founder of Normal and the current legal counsel of Normal. Thanks for joining us on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you, Russ. Nice to be with you.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes brought to you this time by Mr. Spoff, and it's one of my all-time favorites from Upton Sinclair, the Pulitzer Prize-winning American author, who wrote, quote, "It is difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on his not understanding it," end quote. A better description of the Drug Enforcement Administration and all of the narcotics teams in America couldn't have been written. What are these guys going to do when we re-legalize marijuana? All their easy pot busts will go up in smoke, and they might actually have to go after real criminals. Thanks for downloading the podcast and making the Normal Daily Audio Stash the most popular blog and podcast regarding grassroots marijuana legalization in the country. We'll be back next week with more news and interviews you can use, including an exclusive with Alan St. Pierre and Glenn Greenwald at the Cato Institute. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.